message this morning is entitled The Most Important Ballasts. In his novel 1984, George Orwell, he paints the picture of a dystopian wilderness. He imagines what the world would be like under the control of authoritarian regimes. In his world, Big Brother controls everything, where people live, what they say, even how they think. Thought crime, to think thoughts against the ideology of the party with a capital P, is a heinous wrong in this world. Now, the central character in Orwell's book is a man by the name of Winston, and he works at the Ministry of Truth, rewriting history so that it will fit with Big Brother's view of the world. Nowadays, the powers that be just label inconvenient facts as fake news and replace it with alternate facts. Now, Winston hates what he does at that regime and what the regime makes him do. He begins to sort of just rebel against Big Brother, these small but deliberate acts of defiance. As each small act of rebellion occurs, though, the likelihood of Winston being caught increases. And the tension continues to rise and rise until the fateful moment when Winston's resistance is exposed and he's sent to be rehabilitated, which basically means breaking him in emotionally and physically and then turning him once again into a party drone. Now, his interrogator is this gentleman by the name of O'Brien, and he wants to convince Winston that resistance is futile, that the party will never be defeated, that the present will stretch into an unending future. At one point, O'Brien says chillingly to Winston, "If you want a picture of the future, imagine a boot stomping on a human face forever." If you want a picture of the future, imagine a boot stomping on a human face forever. It is a depressing image, a lifetime of wilderness. Now, today's scripture has a setting that is its day and ages version of the dystopian future that's described in Orwell's book and in so much of our popular literature today. And in biblical times, the hopelessness we point to in our modern stories of dystopian futures are captured in wilderness stories. They are seen as places that are vast and confusing and often just full of death, or at least what might seem like the threat of death. In the Old Testament, the Israelites went through the wilderness on a journey from slavery in Egypt to the freedom of the Promised Land. They wander in the wilderness and even lose their religion there. And the threat of death is very real for them until God intervenes. And like Hagar in our scripture today, they ultimately were transformed. Now, we see themes through the books of the prophets and even in Jesus as he enters into the wilderness for 40 days. Even early Christian tradition in it, the wilderness journey and the practice of pilgrimage formed important aspects of discipleship and of devotion. As our story today reminds us, wildernesses are difficult and scary places at times. They can be full of threats, including the possible threat of death. But biblically, they are never an end. Biblically, wildernesses are never an end. Biblically, they are sources of revelation. Yes, they mostly, if not entirely, are difficult revelations, but they are important. Some of the greatest movements of the Spirit and changes in the lives of biblical characters come through wilderness journeys. It's such a clear theme in the Bible, such a clear biblical movement that it's barely even debatable. Those who wrote the Bible, those who assembled it, and they all clearly understood that the wilderness could be, times of important and significant growth. In fact, biblically, they always end up being so. So, for me, the more intriguing question is, what survival skills, what tools do we need to survive these difficult and trying places? It occurs to me that in this increasingly divided nation, with firearm deaths on the uprise, a disappearing of the middle class, and in a land where 1 in 7 people face hunger over the course of a year, with so many things that can make this nation sometimes feel like a new version of the wilderness, survival skills for the wilderness seem to me to be very, very worthwhile, not to mention a timely investigation as well. So, I will start with the story. In 1979, a tugboat named the Cahaba was headed down the Tombigbee River in Alabama. Now, the current's flow was going really fast as this tug pilot approached the bridge. And at that bridge, he was supposed to release his coal barges, which he did. And then he put his 1,800 horsepower twin engines into reverse to start backing away from the bridge. But unfortunately, in this one case, he didn't quite manage to keep the boat in line, and he got just a little offline, at which point the overly strong currents rammed into the side of his boat. The current swung the boat sideways and slammed it into that bridge. And then the current was so strong that it actually forced the boat underwater. But to the astonishment of the onlookers, it passed under the bridge and popped right up, upright, with the engine still going and the pilot still holding onto the wheel. Why did it come back up to surface in an upright position? Well, because it was well ballasted. It had a 3-foot thick lining of cement on the bottom of its hull. The story is a vivid reminder that life can often go horribly wrong. But if we have the right ballast, as David reminded us in the early service, not necessarily the idea of dead weight ballast, but something that anchors us, we can get through it and we can emerge on the other side. One of the clear messages in the wilderness stories in the Bible, and certainly in Hagar's story that we read today, is that the folks in the wilderness never give up on God. And God never gives up on them. They are ballasted in their spiritual beliefs. They are ballasted, sturdied by the recognition, the understanding that God is with them, that they're not alone. Now, admittedly, that to some of us may seem a bit simplistic and even a little bit overly sentimental, unless, of course, you have been in a dark depth, in a murky wilderness. Unless you've struggled with the depression and the isolation that our human instinct runs to when you think that you are lost and alone, feeling hopeless. I'm not saying that it will solve your problems. I'm just saying that it can lighten the load a bit. I'm not saying that the wilderness, the tough times will magically disappear. I'm just saying that it does have a tendency to help you see the light a little more clearly when you're in the darkness. Like that tugboat Cahaba, if we hope to survive the difficult places and spaces that life always brings, it is helpful to be well ballasted, to have some form of hope to hold on to. Even in the wilderness, even as she was certain of the death of her only child, her one and only child, Hagar turns to God and God hears. More precisely, God hears Ishmael, which the meaning of the word Ishmael is actually God heard. And that brings me to a second story I'd like to share with you today. Former U.S. President Richard Nixon, as we know, is infamous for his place at the center of the Watergate scandal. He disgraced the office of the President of the United States, and in the eyes of the world, he disgraced the United States as well. Well, when Hubert Humphrey, a former U.S. Vice President, died, Nixon was invited to and attended the funeral. Dignitaries came from all over the country, all over the world, but yet Nixon was made to feel decidedly unwelcome there. People literally turned their eyes away from him, and conversations ran completely dry as he would walk up. Nixon could feel the ostracism being ladled on him. Then, the serving U.S. president, Jimmy Carter, walked into the room. Carter was from a completely different political party than Nixon, and he was well known for his honesty, his integrity. And as he moved to his seat of honor, President Carter noticed Nixon standing all alone. Well, Carter immediately changed his course. He turned, he walked over to Nixon, he held out his hands, and smiling genuinely, he broadly embraced Nixon and said, "Welcome home, Mr. President. Welcome home." The incident was reported by Newsweek magazine, which wrote this about it. "If there was one turning point in Nixon's long ordeal in the wilderness, it was that moment and that gesture of love and compassion." Carter gifted Nixon with love and compassion. Nixon certainly had done nothing particular to deserve it. It was just an act of pure grace on Carter's part. I think that might be the second part of what helps us through tough times. Each other. More precisely, shared love and compassion between each other. Not because we feel like someone has earned it or deserved it, but because we all need it. Because we are called to it. Because when properly shared, it can help put an end to our wildernesses. When the Bible speaks of God's blessing, it's never a reward for good behavior, hardly. It's almost always a gift of pure, unadulterated grace. I think the question that we should all ask ourselves is, do we play the role of follower of Christ when we see folks in the wilderness? When we see Nixon standing there in the corner, as far as the world's concerned, a person deserving of judgment, do we leave that person there in their own personal wildernesses? Or do we do the unexpected, the somewhat illogical, an altogether Christ-like thing, and embrace them saying, "Welcome home"? I'm definitely not saying that our nation has completely become a big wilderness experience. Not at all. At times in this nation, it pretty much seems like the biggest playground on the face of the earth. But we do go through tough times. Sometimes the very people we elect put us in the places where we go through tough times. And because of it, though, I would argue that it's important that we are all well ballasted. It's important that we realize we are not alone, and not just because of a belief in a higher power, but also because you are not alone because you are part of this spiritual community. These people here and all of those who love and care about you are part of your ballast. For all of us, life is full of wildernesses. the death of families and friends, loss of jobs, health issues, major life changes. I could go on and on. The most important ballast for all of us in those wildernesses is each other. More specifically, it is the way we share and represent love and compassion to each other, even when we may not feel like the other person deserves it. Because it is not about deserving it. It's about needing.